This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings out there to everybody at TFMR. It's Thursday, July 7th, 7-7 on your calendar. And that makes it lucky. And lucky for us, we're getting a Thursday conversation with my old pal, Denver Dave. That is, of course, Dave Kranzler, who you can find his work at investmentresearchdynamics.com. He is the author of the Short Sellers Journal and the Mining Stock Journal. He manages money, puts his money where his mouth is, and he is a fantastic analyst and a commentator, not just on the precious metals, but on the markets in general, due to his long history of experience in these markets, because Dave is not a young guy anymore. Dave, thanks for joining me, buddy.
Thanks for having me on. What was it like? I mean, I am what I am. I turned 60 in September.
What was it like to work with Jesse Livermore? Did you learn a lot back then? Anyway, yeah, I'm only a couple years younger than you, so I got to give you some grief. But all right, Dave, we should just dive right in, because this has been such a crazy time, and the stonk market, though down whatever it is, 20% of the year, continues to be bid now on dips, even though, and there's just signs of madness everywhere. What's going on in Forex? You know, it can be written off by most people as, well, you know, the U.S. is hiking and the ECB and the BOJ are trapped. But then you see things like the credit default swaps on Credit Suisse just blowing out to levels not seen since 2008. I just wonder if there isn't more stress underneath the surface. And that's what Forex is telling us. I mean, as that is your cue, I'll just let you take it from there and let us know what you think.
They don't care what I think. They want to hear you give me shit.
Right, exactly. Well, put the bong down for a little while, Dave. And just Dave lives in Colorado, so I always give him grief because weren't they the first state to legalize marijuana? Might have been. Of course they were.
California might have had medical right before Colorado. It started off with medical in, I think, 2008. And then it went full recreational, I think, in 2012.
There you go. Rocky Mountain High, all the weed smoker, chinette, granola eating, Birkenstock wearing. Anyway, Dave's driving. Not one of those. Dave is a respected precious metals economic analyst. I'll be checking this, by the way, as you're speaking. I'm going to pull up GDP now and see if they've updated it yet this morning. But anyway, go. What do you think about, again, like Credit Suisse and some of these other, do we have an EU banking system problem with the way rates have moved, that sort of thing?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it's more than just an EU banking problem. The easiest way to look at it, you know, what's going on beneath the surface in the bond market or the credit market is you just look at the MOVE index. And the MOVE index is, you know, simplistically, it's the bond market equivalent of the VIX. So when the MOVE index starts rising quickly, it reflects the perception of brewing trouble in the credit markets.
Okay.
And it just so happens, if you pull up the MOVE index, and for the audience, I use the one that's on TradingView. It's free and it goes back to 2003. And if you hit the all tab, you'll see that the MOVE index it's gone from 40 to 151. So massive increase in volatility, which basically means a massive increase in the perception of risk in the credit markets. And this 151 level is the highest that it's been going back to July 2009. Only the difference is that in July 2009, it was coming down from 220. Yeah. And that was, you know, by that point, a lot of the money printing done by the central banks started papering over the problems in the credit market. And they bailed out a lot of the banks, you know, most of the biggest banks. And you would have expected the MOVE to come down. However, if you go back, when it was rising, it was up at this level in January of 2008, which was a couple months before Bear Stearns went tits up. And then it dropped a bit, and then it shot up again. So the MOVE index is rising, and the last time it was rising like this was in 2008. And I mean, it's gone parabolic since the beginning of 2021. It's started to go parabolic. So it reflects, you know, massive credit problems brewing both here and in Europe. And for me, the best indicator of the credit problems going on in Europe is, one, if you look at a daily chart of Deutsche Bank's stock price, it's down like 50% since February. And Deutsche Bank is the most systemically dangerous bank in the world. It's been kept on life support since 2008 by the German government, the Bundesbank, ECB, Bank of England, and the Fed. And I don't know if it's true anymore, but back then, Deutsche Bank's, the size of its assets, and we know most of them were crap assets, was larger than the German GDP. So,
right.
You know, unless they wanted to completely incinerate their country, they kind of had to keep it alive. Not that it's going to fix the problems. It just kicks them down the road. And then you mentioned Credit Suisse. And everyone saw that the chart going around yesterday of the cost of the cost of credit protection against Credit Suisse, right? It's basically the spread over treasuries on the cost of buying a credit default swap to protect, if you own Credit Suisse debt, or if you want to speculate on the demise of Credit Suisse, you buy basically a credit default swap, which is insurance against default. So, and it's back to where it was in 2008. Now, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, all these banks, if they didn't bail them out in 2008, would have gone bankrupt.
Right.
And so, as we were chatting about earlier, and it ties into what's going on in the precious metals market, I'm pretty convinced that what we're going through right now and what we're looking at and what's coming at us is very similar to what happened in 2008, only it's going to be much worse this time, because the derivatives are even though they goofed around with the accounting rules to make it easier to hide the true derivative exposure of these banks, derivatives outstanding are larger on a notional basis. And, there's obviously a lot more debt globally, but especially in the U.S. and the EU. And a lot of that debt is once again, subprime debt. It's not, back in 2008, a lot of it was connected to the mortgage market, although certainly not all of it. But now it's frickin' everything.
Right. Right.
So, I think there's a very strong parallel between what we're seeing in the markets, and that includes the action in the precious metals market and the dollar between 2008 and now. If you look at a chart of the dollar, and I did this earlier this week, the dollar soared between, I have to pull it up again. But, don't hold me to the exact dates, but it soared between, say, the spring of 2008 and March 2009. And that was the period of time when the precious metal sector and the right. stock market got hammered.
Gold went down.
The precious metal sector did a U-turn in October, November 2008, but the stock market kept going lower.
I guess that's what my concern is, Dave, because I mean, everything's run by a computer, and the computers are programmed to sell digital gold futures. When the dollar goes up because the euro is going down because it's 58% of the dollar index. And you look at the euro, the U.S. banks notwithstanding, let me just focus on the European economies in the toilet and getting worse, in a large part due to their dependence on Russian energy, right? It's going to be a disaster as they go into the winter and are trying to ration gas, you know, and trying to stay warm, not even considering what's going on with their manufacturing sector and their economies. Then you got these banks that God knows what their derivative exposure is as rates have skyrocketed. The ECB is trapped, not only trying to protect their banks, but the pigs and their sovereign debt markets of the pigs. It's hard to envision a scenario, at least in the short term, where the euro doesn't keep going down. And if the euro keeps going down, then the dollar index is going to keep going up. And then bringing this all back to the beginning, if the dollar index keep going up, the machines are going to keep dumping gold.
Paper gold, but
right. And you'd like to think at some point that the physical market won't allow price to decline any further. And we saw that back in like 2015. But I remember thinking that in 2013, I thought, well, I don't know if the physical market will let the price go below 1500, and sure as hell it did. So this is what's on my mind. I mean, what do you think about? I mean, is that something we should be concerned about?
Yeah, that's a great question. By the way, I pulled up a chart and it confirmed that the dollar ran from 71 up to almost 90, starting in the spring of 08 into March. Yeah, so
it's 20%, 25%.
Right, and I think a big part of that trade are the hedge funds, as you mentioned, in the electronic algo-driven high-frequency trading action going on. And I think what they're doing is they were short the dollar, they covered their short and started piling into the long side. And against that, they've been shorting the euro and the yen as contra dollar trades.
Right.
And that's why part of the reason, well, I mean, the euro on a fundamental basis should be tanking, as should the yen.
Right.
And then at the same time, with the dollar going up, when the dollar goes up, you're supposed to sell gold. So the hedge funds are doing that also in the paper market. And you can see that pattern in the commitment of trader reports for both gold and silver.
Yep. So is there,
in terms of, you know, can gold and silver go much lower? I mean, you know, again, just to draw the analogy to the summer of 2008, I mean, I think it was, and again, don't hold me to these numbers off the top of my head. I believe it was in March, which was right before Bear Stearns hit the wall. Gold was peaked around 1,020 or something.
Yeah, yeah,
And silver was, I think silver was pushing $20.
I'm pretty sure 18 or 19. Yep.
And then by the end of October, gold had fallen all the way down. I think it tested 700, and I think silver briefly tested 7.
Right.
And, you know, and then all of a sudden, and you would have thought that, well, Bear Stearns blowing up, you know, rumors flying off the shelf that Lehman's going to blow up. European banks are in trouble. You know, the MOVE index is is headed towards 200. Credit default swap spreads are huge. And you would have thought, oh, well, gold is a flight to safety, so, you know, we should buy gold. But no, the price of gold and silver kept going lower. But again, that was in the paper market. It's not in the physical market. So because of the way that they can manipulate, well, I mean, the price management squad manipulates the market, and then the hedge funds just chase the patterns, whether it's downward momentum or upward momentum. So, you know, I think I don't even think we're remotely close to the sell-off in the stock market. And to the extent that that's true, you probably see, you know, hedge funds, as the stock market continues to tank, hedge funds will, you know, they unload everything to avoid margin calls because they're levered up, right? Four or five times they're levered up. And I mean, on a short-term basis, we could see lower prices for gold and silver on the paper market.
But then maybe they cover their shorts because those are the gains that they have to take.
That's the dynamic that gets the U-turn going that we saw in late October 2008.
Well, so let me ask you that.
That's the thesis I'm playing out right now.
Yeah.
That I'm not positioned like I'm ready for the gold and silver market to go lower, but it means I'm not committing any of the precious capital that I managed to raise over the last 3 or 4 months and didn't piss away as I saw my favorite mining stocks get cheaper.
Well, so let me ask you that, because you referenced 2008-09 and gold went down 30% and silver went down, whatever, 50%. But then gold went from $700 to $1,900 in 2 years, and silver went from 8 to 48. And we've seen this before. Most recently, just a couple of years ago, you know, at the COVID, you know, where we went to 1400, then went to 2100 in 6 months. So as the curtain gets pulled back and these, you know, the central bankers get revealed, you get these, you know, a huge surge of interest and all this cash comes pouring in. So that's very likely coming again, but it's going to take that, I guess, Dave, for lack of a better term, that Powell pivot. What do you think? I mean, I've kind of thought the whole, you know, going back to January when I wrote my annual forecast, I thought, well, it's going to take the stock market crashing like it did in 18 to get them to pivot again. Do you think that would be the number one thing? I mean, they're pretending like there's not a recession. I mean, they're just lying their way through that. What will force you know, the Fed to say, okay, we can't hike anymore. Now we got to start talking about cutting and starting QE again, because that seems to be the catalyst.
I mean, that's the $64,000 question. Part of the problem is they face a completely different set of problems now than they did back then, and the problems are worse now. So not just the issues in the credit market that you know we can observe by looking at the MOVE Index or Deutsche Bank stock price, stock chart, or the cost of credit default swaps on Credit Suisse. Back then, interest rates were, I believe they're still around 5%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, where do you take interest? We're at what, 1.5 to 1.75 on the Fed funds target rate? I mean, where do you take that from here? Back down to zero?
Yeah.
I mean, just raising the Fed funds from 0 to 1.5% has caused this havoc in the markets. And the Fed has not really in any material way reduced the size of its balance sheet. And that's what it really needs to do if it wants to attack price inflation. And that, I guess that brings me to my point about another big problem they're facing this time versus then. I mean, if you just go by the CPI, and obviously we know that's fraudulent, you know, inflation was not a problem back then. I think it was running at 2 to 3%. Remember the Goldilocks economy? And now it's obviously running over 8%. And, you know, maybe back then real inflation was double or triple what the CPI was showing it to be. But now real inflation, if you use John Williams' shadow stats alternative and calculate the CPI the way it was calculated in 1980, you're over 16% in inflation. So, I think if the Fed is to pivot because they want to prevent the system from collapsing, you know, and again, we all know the conspiracy theories out there about setting up for the reset, which, you know, I'm not dismissing it for sure. But if they want to, you know, prevent just the complete incineration of the Western banking and economic system, they're going to have to pivot, but in a pivot in a way where they're going to have to print multiples of what they've printed already.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's to me, that's the big debate. Will the Fed not pivot? Because if they do revert back to printing money and taking rates to zero, I mean, 16% real inflation is going to turn into 48% real inflation pronto. In that scenario, you know, I mean, we'll see levels for gold and silver that most people don't dream is possible. But I think in either scenario, we're going to see higher levels for gold and silver, because at some point there's going to be a massive flight to safety flow of capital, regardless of what the Fed is doing, into actual physical gold and silver. I mean, in that in that tweet, in a tweet that was related to that analysis of what's going on in the oil market that you tweeted out earlier today. And everyone should take a look at that, because what that guy describes, I believe, is being driven by the hedge funds, you know, selling paper. But there was a guy on there who said he spoke to a refiner in Singapore, and it sounded like he wanted to put in an order for 200 kilograms of gold. And, or he asked the refinery if they could fill, you know, just an order coming in out of the blue for 200 kilograms of gold. And they said, no, we wouldn't be able to fill it right now. Demand's too strong and we have too much of a backlog. So, you know, again, that, what I like to rant about is, you know, everyone's whining about what's going on in the gold market. And believe me, I'm not happy about it. It sucks. You know, my personal account's getting killed and my fund is getting killed, but, I know that it's going on in the paper market, and the prices we're seeing are being set in the paper market and not the physical market. I mean, you can't identify for me, other than maybe the BIS or the center or some of the Western central banks, you cannot identify a bona fide seller of large quantities of physical gold or silver, other than maybe mining companies, and they have to because that's their business.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, if someone put in an order for 100 tons of gold tomorrow in London and said, you know, all or none, and I want to take delivery immediately, you have to guarantee I can come into your vault and remove the bars. I think it would take a price somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 an ounce in order for that order to clear the market. And maybe not even that.
To find a willing seller.
Might even take a higher. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. To find a willing seller. Yeah.
Yeah.
To part with it. Yeah. Well, Dave, I have one last question for you. Because this has been obviously, I think, in everybody's mind that owns mining shares. And it's, you know, just what you do for a living. The Mining Stock Journal is a must read, something if you're interested in the mining sector, you should be a subscriber. The shares are once again being treated as if gold's like they're selling all their metal at a loss, which some of them are, I guess, with inflation, you know, with all in sustaining costs and diesel costs and everything else. But they're being treated, the sector itself is, and especially the exploration companies, are being treated as if they have nothing, you know, that they don't produce a product, you know, that they are Tesla, you know, it's maddening sometimes because, as far as I know, Newmont and these, you know, big companies aren't going out of business. You know, the juniors are still out there doing their thing. The ounces in the ground at some of the exploration companies hasn't changed, but yet their valuations have been cut in half or two thirds. My question is, Dave, how do you keep your sanity, I guess, with this being such a focus of your business? How do you keep your sanity in times like this?
Earlier. We have a bomb shelter in my basement, and when they start hitting the mining stocks, I just go down there and cower in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean,
do you reassure yourself that there's a price at which, you know, because people say, well, why don't they just take the paper price to zero? Well, at some point, you know, the physical market takes over and, you know, that impacts the miners as well. I mean, like I said, so when you get in a period like this, how do you keep your sanity?
I mean, I've lived through a couple cycles like this.
Yeah.
You know, there was a mini cycle like this in 2006, the summer of 2006, ironically. And then obviously there was 2008. I mean, the Huey, and I don't remember where it peaked out before it descended down. It actually traded intraday at 145 back then. And I think it came down from the 300s. And then it ran between early November 2008 and the end of the year, it doubled. So it went from 150 to 300. And then it a little bit more than doubled again over the next 2.5 years. between 2009 and mid 2011. So, and I honestly think that, and I don't have numbers for GDX off the top of my head. GDX may have, I'm sure GDX outperformed the Huey over that period, but I just, GDX was still pretty new back then. And I, you know, I was really used the Huey more as my proxy for what's going on in the, at least the producing miners or the sector. But I showed a chart in my June 23rd Mining Stock Journal. And I know you get the Mining Stock Journal, but I don't want to be presumptuous and assume you actually open it and read it. But
no, I never do that.
There was a chart in there.
It just goes straight to spam, Dave.
I don't blame you. But so I showed a ratio of the S&P 500 to the Huey on a monthly basis that goes all the way back to 2001. And I just chose the beginning of 2001 because that's kind of when the secular bull market that we're in the sector, that's, you know, going on in the sector right now, that's kind of when it, you know, it's not precisely when it started, but, you know, that's when it really started, you know, it was moving higher from the bottom.
Yeah.
And that ratio got down to 2 in 2011, and now it's up at 16. And the only other times it's been up this high were in March of 2020 and the end of 2015. Jeez. And then you have to go all the way back to early 2001 for
historic lows. So, historic bottoms. Yeah.
Yeah. So on a relative basis, this chart tells you that the mining stocks are historically cheap relative to at least the stock market. And you probably make the same. I don't think it's quite the same for the ratio of, you know, the Huey index to gold. I was just checking to see if I think I have a chart saved, but relative to the price of gold, the mining stocks are, just looking to see if I have, oh, here we go. Here's a gold Huey chart. Okay. So this is basically the same chart. And relative to the price of gold, the mining, the Huey index anyway, is not as cheap relative to gold, quite as cheap as it was actually in the beginning, in the early part of 2018, and then in March 2020, and then the end of 2015. But it's cheaper relative to the price of gold than it was in the beginning of 2001. So relative to the price of gold, the mining stocks are historically cheap. And relative to the stock market, the rest of the stock market, the mining stocks are historically cheap. So for me, I keep my sanity by saying, okay, you know, if I'm sitting at the blackjack table right now, the dealer's showing a six and I've got an 11. So I'm going to double down, you know, and odds are is that I'm going to be right and make a lot of money and the house will lose. And the other way I look at that is if that's not the case, then it means that we've had just, you know, apocalypse in across the all the markets, you know, global economy, et cetera. And we've got worse problems that we're looking at than the value of our stock account.
Right. Right.
So for me, it's kind of an either or. We're either going to have a massive rally in the sector at some point. And I'm loath to put a time frame on that, certainly before the end of the year. And if that doesn't happen, it means I hope people have stocked up food and toilet paper and ammo.
I'm concurring, but in all sincerity, concurring. I mean, this is the geopolitical stuff in particular. I mean, we've kind of gotten a little frog in the pot going since February, right? It's like,
yeah.
I remember in late February thinking, oh my God, I'm actually concerned about nuclear war for the first time since 1985. And now it's just like, well, you know, I don't know, it's been 4 months. All of that. And like I said, this winter and the European gas thing with Russia is, it's going to be a real problem. So that we have bigger things to worry about, that's for sure. But as we look at this, though, I just can't help but feel that like those times you mentioned in the past, And those were difficult times to be living through and buying and holding and buying more and all that kind of stuff. But it all kind of, you know, turned out to be fruitful in the end. I would imagine that's how we have to look at this too.
I mean, you know, the scenario where this happens is the central banks pivot. I mean, we already saw China, what was it, 200 billion won they dumped into their system or something last night. So, you know, they're already trying to reflate their system. And I mean, like I said, unless there's some scheme where the Western governments and central banks are trying to completely decimate the economic and financial system. Here we go. Yeah, $220 billion in US dollars of stimulus over in China was announced last night.
Yeah.
So, and that's not a small amount.
No,
obviously.
No.
And
no.
So if the Western central banks follow suit, probably not until this fall, that'll be your trigger. We'll see this sector move quickly. If that happens.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, you know, I'd say I'm not worried about trying to pick a bottom here. So, you know, every time, you know, like today, you know, the Huey index opened up, I think at one point it was up 5 points. It's back to up at, you know, a little more than a point. You know, I didn't say to myself, ooh, this might be it. I'm going to jump in. You know, I'm going to load up on Hecla calls because I think Hecla's very cheap right now. And I talk about it and the issue that comes out today, but I'm not worried about picking a bottom because if history repeats, you know, and let's say the Huey bottoms out at 200, I'm not saying that's what my forecast is, but just for sake of mathematics, you know, if I miss the first 10% of that move and it looks like this, you know, the move's going to be sustainable for a while, I'm fine jumping in then because, you know, I know that this index is going to double or triple quickly. And, you know, I'm happy if I just catch 60% of the entire move that's going to come.
Right, right. And that's why you've been able to do what you do for so long, Dave. I mean, that's smart. And you do a great job. I'm just sitting here.
That.
No, but I'm with you in that boat. And it's just going to be, again, the hard part is having the patience and conviction, really, to wait it out.
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, I'm seeing signs of capitulation. I've, you know, the last couple of weeks, I've been getting, you know, more than the usual amount of agitated emails from subscribers.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's fine. I answer every subscriber's email, and sometimes it helps me create some useful content.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just in the last couple of weeks, you know, cancellations have started to outpace new subscriptions or renewals. And that always happens as we're getting near a bottom in the sector.
Right.
So, you know, that's an anecdotal indicator, but you know, we're seeing a lot of these anecdotal indicators, like the banks going net long paper silver on the COMEX.
Right.
And I would bet money, I don't think the COT report will come out till Monday instead of tomorrow because of the holiday.
It's tomorrow. It's Friday.
Oh, it is tomorrow for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I bet you the hedge funds are net short silver. I'd be surprised if they're not. It might not be, but
yeah, for the week,
the trading patterns.
Silver was down $1.75 on the 4-day week, but open interest is up 4,000 contracts. So you know, that's hedge fund shorting.
It's got to be the hedge funds. And I did an exercise last night. If you want, I can send you this chart. I don't know if you can put it in the podcast since we're too ugly to do video, but I went back to beginning of 2015 to look at when the banks, or no, not the banks. It's not just the banks that go net short. It's when the hedge funds are actually net short, the managed money.
Right.
So the managed money segment was net short in the spring of April, or, you know, starting in April 2015, and it went to their net short position. Actually, I take that back. Started in June. I'm looking at a weekly chart. So June into August. They were net short, the hedge funds. And that wasn't the precise bottom, but silver had a decent move starting in January 2015. And I'm using SLV just because it's on my stock software. But, you know, silver SLV ran from 13 to 17, actually higher than that. It ran up to almost 20. So that's a pretty big percentage move.
Mm-hmm.
And then fast forward to the hedge funds were net short from July to December 2018.
18, yep.
And silver actually kept going lower. Remember, that's when we had that massive sell-off in the stock mm-hmm. market.
It was right at the end of that Fed cycle, right before the first Powell pivot.
Yes, yes. And actually, they were short from February to May 2018, and that's when the market started, kept going, that's when silver kept going lower. But then they were short from July to December 2018, and that's when we actually had a move that took SLV from 13 back up to about 18 by October 2019. And they were also net short from April to June 2019. This is the hedge funds, not the banks. So, that preceded the move from 13 to 18, basically.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and so, you know, now if we, you know, per the next COT report, actually not just one COT report, the next several COT reports, and if we see that the hedge funds net short and continuing to build that net short, to me, that's another indicator that we're probably close to a bottom, maybe not necessarily a bottom, because if they keep adding to their net short, if they keep throwing more shorts out there, it's probably going to push the market a little lower. But it also means at some point we're going to have a springboard move higher.
Yeah. Yeah. The risk reward from here is painful as it is, and not meaning that the change is imminent, but going forward 6-12 months, you think the risk reward would be skewed quite a bit toward reward.
Yes.
Well, my buddy, I appreciate your time. We better wrap up to respect everybody else's time. We could sit here and just talk all day.
I know. And I got to go hit the tennis courts.
You go do that. All right, you go do that. And but be careful. You know, old guy like you running around, God, between your shoulders and your knees and your ticker. Make sure you stay hydrated, you know, all that stuff. All right. All right, Dave, thanks so much for your time, my friend. I sneaky feeling. Why don't we try to do this again once football season is underway and just see how radically things have changed between now and then.
In the markets and between the Chiefs and the Broncos.
Right, right, exactly. All right, thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Craig.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation for you very soon.